Good evening. Welcome to Council Connection for October. I'm Steve Dresser. This month we've got lots to cover. We have a fall conference to talk about, news from the Legislative Committee, a website loaded with good information for Massachusetts residents, a song to end our show, and we'll start out with Bob Hache telling us about National White Cane Safety Day.
So here's the deal. This year's Boston celebration of White Cane Safety Day, which is sponsored by the Bay State Council of the Blind, NFB, and is actually organized mostly by the Mass Commission for the Blind, is going to be on October 23rd, that's Monday, okay, at the State House in the Hall of Flags. And that's going to be from 10 a.m. to noon. Light breakfast will be served. And there will be speakers, and the White Cane Law will be read. And the purpose of White Cane Day really is to emphasize the importance of the white cane in the independence of blind and visually impaired persons, and how the white cane is a symbol of that independence. And often what we'll hear are speakers that talk about how they learn to use the white cane, sometimes children, but mostly it's adults who have been sighted and gone blind, and they talk about and of course that's quite a shocker, and you know, you and I are both born blind, so we don't quite know what that's like, but that's, you know, quite a shock from everything that I hear about from, you know, personal experience with friends and different readings and things. So the basic idea is to let people know, and this is something that the Commissioner of the Blind has been doing for many years, and one of the things that's changed about it that I think is good is that we've done more reaching out to other agencies. We're not just a bunch of blind people sitting there and talking about the white cane. For example, we've reached out to organizations like the Registry of Motor Vehicles and asked them to put a little bit more emphasis in the manuals and the trainings that get done when people get their driver's licenses, you know. And
so in many ways, this whole event is really more focused on getting information to people who might not know about the white cane as opposed to those of us who are very familiar with it.
I agree with you. I mean, it's some of both. I mean, people get together to, you know, celebrate the white cane, so it is that too. And it actually began in 1964. I was just looking at this. There was a resolution of Congress that authorized the president to declare October 15th as White Cane Safety Day each year. And, of course, you know, we try to get a date as close to the 15th as we can. It's very difficult to get room in the State House and availability of the different personnel that we need, you know, to do this. So it's usually any time around that area. But the real date is October 15th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's coming up as well. And there are all sorts of recognitions all over the country, some local, some statewide. And in some cases, they'll actually do white cane walks. We did a couple of those. That's not happening this year, but we have done that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I also know that in other areas of the state, there have been local white cane events that take place. I think it was in Commission for the Blind's Region 3, if I remember correctly, which is your region, I believe, Steve.
Okay.
The north area, so to speak, north, metro west, metro north, shall we call it,
okay,
of Boston, and then up that way toward the North Shore. So we invite people, and anyone is welcome to come. If you want more information on the event, please get in touch with Meg Robertson. That would be at 617-626-7581, and she is the Director of Orientation and Mobility. And again, her phone number is 617-626-7581.
All right. Well, certainly worth doing, and just on the basis of having other people become as aware of the use of the white cane as we, of course, are.
Well, that's right. And there's a few other things that people can do, too, and some of this might actually be more important, to be honest with you. I just put an announcement on our list just to remind people again about the event, and I put a little introduction, which is maybe was a little bit preachy. It talked about being a frustrated pedestrian, and it encouraged anyone who is a frustrated pedestrian, that would be someone who is concerned that maybe some of the drivers in the area aren't paying as much attention as they might, which unfortunately seems to be more common than it used to be. Sometimes I feel like as a pedestrian I'm doing battle, so to speak, a little bit.
Well, there is an element of that, and of course we're coming up to wintertime, and another issue is going to be snow and ice sidewalks.
That's a good one, and those are both issues that... And what I encourage people to do when they're having issues is, on a very personal level, one of the things you can do is to reach out to your local police department, and there's usually community police officers that will be happy to speak with you about issues of concern. And, you know, just let them know that, you know, you're having trouble at intersection X or Y or Main Street and whatever it's going to be, and then... you know, tell them what the problem is, if some of the traffic isn't stopping or if people are, you know, telling you to do things that maybe you don't really want to do because of safety and just, and but mainly, you know, people who are, you know, not observing the lights and such like that. And, you know, also people that are driving too fast. There are some streets where the traffic is just too fast and needs to be, you know, slowed down a bit at times, especially in thickly settled areas. And, you know... And the other thing you can do, of course, is to join the local Commission on Disability, and you have a forum then to bring any of these issues to the fore. And, of course, one of the things that helps sometimes in some areas is getting audible signals installed if you're having a problem at a lighted intersection, let's say.
Well, and, you know, even in places where the audible signals are there, sometimes you just want to be able to report if there are any problems with them. I've heard of cases where the time that you get to walk across the street is extremely short. And unfortunately, people, the signals will not get fixed unless we report the problems.
Absolutely not. In a lot of ways, it's like a lot of the other processes in accessibility. And Brian Charlson has done a nice job drumming this one into my head. It is a complaint-driven process, which means that the only way things improve and that we move the ball forward is if complaints are filed.
Well, and that's even true in the sighted world. I mean, if a traffic light's not working and nobody reports it, it's going to continue not to work.
Well, that's right. If nobody reports it, then the assumption is, and is logical to be, that everything is working fine.
That's right.
And so that we need... And, you know, sometimes in different areas, people say, well, I filed that complaint before. And I said, well, guess what? If you didn't get it fixed, then maybe you got to file it again. Maybe you have to bring it to somebody else.
Or maybe the problem has simply reoccurred.
Yeah.
And that can happen, too.
Absolutely. I've got an intersection over here where if we've had a bad rainstorm, chances are the walk light button on one side of the intersection will be out. Apparently, that's an older set up there than the other corners.
And water's probably getting into the wiring.
It's getting into something.
Yep. And that'll mess it up as well as anything else in the world.
So, you know, I call the wires department, and they usually fix it right away.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess eventually they're going to replace it. Hopefully it will be soon. But,
right. Maybe even in your lifetime.
Maybe. Just maybe,
you just
my friend.
Don't know.
You just don't know. And these are the kinds, and also, you know, we're always here, too. I'll give you my contact information at the end of this if anyone's having, especially if it's a recurring problem. Anyone who brings me a problem, I would like you to have, you know, attempted to work it out, you know, between you and the local officials.
But sometimes people just need to have guidance as to who they need to contact.
Well, that's true, too.
That's something else that you can do.
That's right,
they might need.
That's true.
So why don't we do that since we're talking about it?
All right. This is Bob Hache. My phone is 781-893-6251. And my email is bhache@verizon.net. That's B-H-A-C-H-E-Y @verizon.net. Although I'll be honest, if you need a quick response, pick up the telephone, please.
That's right. The ding-a-ling machine works best.
Yeah, email's good, but, you know, I get so darn much of it sometimes.
Phone calls are better.
Yep.
So once more, before we go, why don't you give us the date of the...
Okay, White Cane Safety Day this year at the State House is going to be on Monday, October the 23rd, from 10 a.m. to noon at the Hall of Flags in the State House. And the address there is 24... Beacon Street. If you're using the ride, tell them you want to come in on the Bowden Street entrance. That's That's okay. That's where they do their drop-offs.
All right. Well, Bob, thank you for updating us on this and giving us some very important information for people to be aware of
in
October.
Okay.
I'm your host, Steve Dresser, and you're listening to Council Connection. The show is broadcast on the Talking Information Center on the first Thursday of every month at 8 o'clock p.m. and on ACB Radio on the second Tuesday of the month at 9 p.m. Let's turn now to an upcoming event I know you won't want to miss, our BSCB Fall Conference. Here's David Kingsbury to fill us in. Good evening, David, and welcome back to Council Connection. And I guess you're here to tell us about the Fall Conference.
Yes. Hi, Steve. I hope you're doing well.
I am.
Yep. I've been busy with the Fall Conference Committee, getting things organized. I'm the coordinator, but the other members are Mary Haroyan, Rose Miller, and Bob Hache. And so we've been busy putting the program together and dealing with the logistics and so on. And it's a month away now. November 4th, it's going to be Saturday, November 4th. At the Carroll Center, we'll be convening in the Tech Auditorium there for our general sessions. But then we're going to also have some breakout sessions in the afternoon. So we're busy at that. Folks should have hopefully received in their inboxes the registration information.
Okay.
And got a couple of different ways people can register, as has been in the case in the past. People can do it online through the Eventbrite system. Actually, as of now, we have two official participants, myself and Rick Morin, because we tested it all the way from the beginning to the end just to make sure we could register, and that worked well. So if nothing else, Rick and I will be there in a month or so.
Well, that's good.
Hopefully for more people than that.
Yeah, hopefully you will not be the only ones.
Yeah, people can also call into the BSCB phone number and leave a message, and one of our committee members is going to get back to them, you know, to collect from them the necessary information on their lunch choices, their breakout session choices, and so on. Yeah, we're happy to say that it's going to be $20 this year, $5 down from last year, just because our venue, the Carroll Center, is costing us less than Perkins did last year, so we're passing that back to people. So
okay.
$20, but we have lots of other fun things people can spend their money on. Rose Miller is our raffle coordinator, so she's been collecting gift coupons from a number of businesses, and then we're also going to have as the grand prize a free Saturday night hotel room at the spring conference coming up in March. So we'll be doing a raffle during lunch, and that should be fun. So we haven't figured out exactly what the ticket prices are going to be yet, but we will, and that should be an amusing thing during the lunch break.
Now, for anybody who doesn't register online, can they register at the door? Because this question comes up just about every year.
People can register at the door. We wouldn't turn anybody away. The only thing is you're not guaranteed of getting a lunch.
Right, because, and that makes sense.
Yeah, the lunch orders, you know, those have to be in several days ahead of time. We're going to have Panera Bread's preparing sandwiches and, you know, a box lunch with sandwich, chips, cookies, and so on, as they've done in the past. And so we've set a deadline for registration of the Monday before the Saturday. I think that is October 30th. So we can, you know, be sure to get people their lunch choices. So people can come, but, you know, they're not assured getting a lunch.
Yeah. So basically the thing to remember is if you have not registered at the beginning of the week prior to the convention, you may have to bring your own lunch.
Bring your own lunch or go hungry.
Or steal somebody else's if you can get away with it, I suppose.
Well, that's not right. We're going to have a couple of talks about diet in the afternoon, healthy diet. On a cooker. And also, if you are hungry and going into that, that would probably not be a good thing.
Well, I'm looking forward to the convention. And, of course, I assuming that all the breakout sessions have not yet totally been finalized, or is that not true?
Well, for the overall program, including the breakout sessions, I'd say we're about 90% there, which I think is pretty good for with 1 month to go. So
that is good.
We're going to follow the same format as we've traditionally followed at past fall conferences, with a general session in the morning where everybody's together, a couple of one-hour breakout sessions in the afternoon where people can choose amongst different topics, then we'll come back together in the afternoon. So quick rundown of what we have planned for the morning session, because it is at the Carroll Center. We'll start with a welcome from Greg Donnelly, who's the president of the Carroll Center. And Brian will give his president's address just to recap recent developments and accomplishments of the BSCB and things that are planned for the future. And I think it's been a pretty productive year, but he'll tell us all about that. So after Brian speaks, myself and Diane Croft are going to roll out the new BSCB logo. This was designed by Gretchen Thompson, but Diane gave a lot of really valuable input. She has experience with the National Braille Press and other places dealing with things like logos and marketing and the like, and she gave some really good input on that. So we'll be rolling out the new logo, describing it and all, and what its uses are, and why we came up with what we came up with. Rick Morin is going to talk about recent developments in transportation, and of course, if you are an MBTA ride user like myself, at least in that area, there's just been a lot of recent developments.
Yes, there has.
So Rick will talk about that. We'll try to keep it short, but that tends to be an area where you get a lot of questions.
Absolutely.
We're going to have a panel session on the new IRA technology, because we have a number of members who are using that. So I want to get an idea of what their experience has been, what they found that useful for, and so on. We might have somebody from Google actually visit too, but we're not sure about that. But at least we'll have a panel, and those who've been using it for probably now 2-3 months or so can tell us a bit about their experience. We, on the advocacy front, we're not 100%. We have a couple of options. We're not totally there yet. We may either get a legislator to come and speak. That worked out really well last year, I think.
Yes,
I think people
too,
appreciated it.
Right.
Yeah.
He was very good.
Yeah. So we're not entirely sure if we're going to have a legislator, but we have a potential plan B that could be interesting.
Okay.
And that is to have another panel of BSCB members who have served on their town's disability commissions. The idea being, to get a bit of their experience on how they get involved, the types of activities they've taken on, with the ultimate objective to get, other members to think about perhaps getting involved more actively in their own towns, because I think, advocacy begins, right on the doorstep there, and no better place to do it than in your own town, where you've got issues related to transportation and streetlights and various other things. So one way or the other, in the morning we will have an advocacy related activity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it for the morning, so it's really sort of jam-packed. We'll be starting at 9:30, because it is sort of so jam-packed.
Yep.
Take that up to lunch.
Sure.
When as I said, among other things, we'll have people get to socialize as well as win some prizes in the raffle that we're going to do, the fundraising raffle for the BSCB. Then in the afternoon, we'll have a couple of one-hour breakout sessions, I think from about 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock, 2:15 to 3:15, and I have a number of interesting choices. As we were saying earlier, one will be about healthy diet, where we hope to get a nutritionist to come and speak about that. The the cooker that Brian uses. Again, I don't know that much about it, but I'm signing myself up for that to learn about it. That should be interesting.
Well, yes, his presentations are, if nothing else, they're always dramatic and they're always kind of fun.
Yeah. So we would expect that one to be a popular one. There are a number on the technology front. We've got a couple of things going. There are some new apps that for the iPhone that people are buzzing about, in particular the Microsoft Seeing AI. I guess AI is for artificial intelligence app, and I've taken a spin with that, and it's really pretty impressive. It's got a nice, some fun gimmicky things, but then some also really useful things like reading barcodes and the like, and it's I don't know if you've used it, but very impressive, especially for a, you know, a version 1.0. And you can't go wrong with the price because it's free, and we're hoping that, you know, Microsoft will continue to develop it. They're going to talk about that and a couple of other apps like Be My Eyes, and maybe also the new Rainbow Color Identifier, which actually has gotten really good reviews as color identifiers go.
I've got one of those, and it does work quite well.
Yeah, so, you know, and very nice, easy, intuitive thing to use.
Yep.
Also on the tech front, we're also going to have a demo of the new Orbit Reader for refreshable Braille that has recently come out, and people are wanting to get their hands on that to test it out, the low-cost Braille Reader, and yep. That should be very interesting for those of us who are Braille folks. I'm not as much one of those as you are, but I think that should be very interesting technology. And a couple of more sessions. Again, people will be able to choose amongst these. Hannah Fairbairn, who recently retired from the Carroll Center, has written a book on social challenges faced by blind people, and she's going to talk about her book and take questions, have good discussion. And I was actually one person who participated as sort of a focus group member when she was developing that book, and I just think there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. I learned a lot and pondered a lot of things when she was putting that together, and it's great that her book is out, so she's going to talk about that, and I think that should be an interesting session. And then to round things off, GDUM, the guide dog users of Massachusetts, they're going to meet with their members for one of the periods. So people will be able to choose amongst those various options during those 2 hours. We'll get back together for a final general session at 3:30, where we're going to have the developer of the Eclipse Soundscapes app that I used, you know, during the eclipse in August. His name is Dr. Henry Winter. From Harvard, and I actually heard him speak at ViBug a couple of weeks ago, and he was just really very, very personable, very interesting guy, you know, brought all that fancy science stuff, you know, down to my level, which is an accomplishment, and he's just very enthusiastic about working with blind folks on other accessible apps to sort of bring the heavens a little closer to us. So
yes.
He was very entertaining, very personable, and just was really interested in getting to know the blindness community. So I came up, walked up to him afterwards and say, hey, here's your shot. Come and visit with us. And he's very enthusiastic about that. So we'll finish up the official conference at 4, but then there is also one final thing, which is for those who are interested, there'll be an optional session from 4 to 5 that's going to be led by, I think, Brian and Kim, where people can talk about, you know, their expectations of the ACB National. I don't know exactly what questions are going to be asked, but I think, you know, it's going to be a lot of give and take about, you know, what we think the value added could be from ACB National, and my understanding is they're having similar focus groups in other state affiliate conventions and conferences. So Brian and Kim thought that this is the timing is really good for this. But again, this is optional, and you know, people can come to it if they want, or leave at 4 o'clock. So anyway, a very a very full day, and
well worth the price of admission.
I think so. Well,
you get a lot
for
your $20. That's,
yeah.
Well, David, thank you for giving us a summary of what's going on. And, of course, I would urge everybody to watch their inboxes, watch their mailboxes for those who are getting hard copy announcements. And just stay tuned and make sure that you set aside the date of November 4th to join us for the conference.
Yeah, folks should register early and often, but actually they should only register once.
That only applies to voting and only in Chicago.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, David. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you very much, Steve, and I look forward to seeing you and hopefully a whole bunch of other folks on November 4th in Newton.
You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. The show also airs on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit www.acbofma.org and look for the Council Connection. Between conventions, we turn our attention to advocacy, a big part of which deals with the legislature. Here's Deanne Elliott, chair of the Legislative Committee, to tell us what's been happening. Good evening, Deanne. Welcome to the show, and it's been a while since we've had you on here.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. It's nice to be here.
So I understand from the various traffic on the announce list that the Legislative Committee has been a bit busy this month.
Yeah, we've had a lot of things on our plate, all good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a very interesting environment to work in, and we're taking on some new projects, and we're dealing with some that we've been dealing with for a while, so it's very exciting.
Yeah, I guess one of the ones that you've been dealing with for a while is the Mass Eye and Ear negotiations.
Yeah, that's right. People who have been coming to our conferences and reading our announcements have heard for the last 3 or 4 years that we've been involved in some negotiations with them, and this last August marked the 1 year anniversary of the signing of our agreement, which marks the beginning rather than the end of a partnership with them that will last for the next 5 years. So we're looking forward to meeting with them this month, and I think we've got a nice cooperative agreement established. They've got the right people at the table, we've got the right people at the table, and we're starting to see some progress.
So I get a little bit confused, and I think some other people may too, when you say that you've been in negotiations with them for the last 3 or 4 years, and yet this year is the beginning of the agreement. That makes my head spin.
I can see why. It is a little confusing. It took us about 3 years of working with their attorneys and ours to get to the point where we were able to finalize a rather lengthy and comprehensive legal agreement with them. And one part of that agreement is that for the next 5 years, we'll be meeting with them a couple of times a year to discuss ongoing concerns. And that gives us an opportunity to help shape their internal policies.
Mm-hmm.
So one way that our members can be really helpful at this point, I know that sometimes after hearing about it for a while, people think that now the Mass Eye and Ear is all that we expect and want it to be. And It's very much an ongoing work in progress, and
right,
they've been good partners for us. So at this point, I think the way that members can be most helpful is if anyone does have an appointment at the hospital and they would like to send us an email reporting back on their experience, we can take that experience to this committee, and we'll have a regular forum in which we can work out details. And that's true for things that don't work up to people's expectations, and also the wins. If people have a positive experience, we want to hear about that too. They're working right now on making their homepage and their accessibility page truly accessible by modifying the fonts and removing captchas, so that will be a big improvement. And, you know, any little thing from the accessibility of forms that one fills out to the sighted guide technique that was used by a member of the staff, all of that is good feedback for us to have, so we welcome those comments.
Okay, so I'm sitting here listening to this, and I'm thinking, gee, I'm not sure that I would know exactly what will be useful to you, but it sounds like what you're saying is whatever anybody writes, you'll find a way to use it in the work that you're doing?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's true. People have reported recently that they've tried to fill out a form in a particular department, like one of those pre-appointment forms, and maybe the accessibility when they were using JAWS was a little sticky. So if they can let us know what version of JAWS they were using and what form they were trying to fill out, we can report back to the Mass Eye and Ear and ask them to take a look at that particular form. If people try to order a document in Braille and it comes right on time, that's good feedback for us to have. If it takes a month and by the time a person receives it, it's less useful, that's good feedback for us to know too, mm-hmm. so that we can help them streamline that process. Any comments that people might have about signage, about how helpful people were in the cafeteria, it's a very broad agreement.
Okay.
So it covers many, many areas.
Ah,
and
well,
people can also help by taking good notes. Documentation is important. Not documentation in the legal sense, like we're going to take them to court, but just documentation so that, you know, all of our memories change a little bit if something happened 2 or 3
yeah.
months ago. So people can just go home from the appointment and write down a few notes about how their experience went. We'd like to hear about it.
Kind of the difference between just saying it didn't work as opposed to saying when I got to the page, I couldn't keep the cursor on the in the box that I was supposed to be filling out, or JAWS didn't speak the caption of the edit field that I was in, or I went to check a box and it said it was checked, but in fact I found out later that it wasn't. Stuff like that, I think, is what you probably mean by documentation, right?
Yes, exactly. The more precise people can be, the better our chances are of being able to identify and duplicate that problem so that we can find a way to correct it.
Okay, so if I were to do something with Mass Eye and Ear and fill out some email or send you an email, can I assume that you most likely would call me and just if you didn't understand what I'd put in the email, you'd call me and ask me to elaborate on what I had said?
Yeah, we don't expect people to be technology experts. I know
right.
that for myself, when I'm using a website, sometimes I don't really know what's wrong. It just doesn't work, and that's okay too, whatever feedback people can give. I can give you my email address.
Okay.
And it's Deanne, D-E-A-N-N, dot Elliott, E-L-L-I-O-T-T, at gmail.com. They can contact any one of us on the team, which includes Brian Charlson, Carl Richardson, Rick Morin, David Kingsbury, our family liaison representatives are John Smith and Jeanette Kutash,
oh.
and they can send it to me as well. We have a good team, good representation.
Moving on to some other activities that the Legislative Committee has been involved in, I understand you had a call on September 27th for all of BSCB members. Is that right?
Yes, we did. That was the first time that we tried a new strategy, which we hope to repeat 2 or 3 times a year. It was mostly a way for us to touch base with members to make sure that we're responding to the things that are of concern to the Bay State Council, and also to solicit some ideas, because we have a lot of really talented people with broad experience, and it was just a way to open up a conversation. We're hoping to be able to repeat it. We had about a dozen people in the call and
That's
got
good.
Some very good ideas. Yeah, I was
yeah,
pleased with it.
Yeah, because often I've seen membership calls like that that were done on a national level, and maybe 2 or 3 people showed up, and that was all they got. So the fact that you got a dozen, I think, is quite impressive.
Well, we were happy with the turnout, and we'd like to see more. It would be great. I'm told by freeconferencecall.com that they can handle as many as 1,000 members.
Yes, they
so
can.
So there's no upper limit.
No, and that's a good thing. And I've not tested it to the limits of what it will do, because I can't figure out how to get 1,000 people together to talk about anything. I sometimes have trouble with 10, but
exactly.
So. Certainly that call was a success, and we will be keeping our collective ears open for announcements of future calls as they come up. Haven't you also been involved with some activities working with students on some things that accessibility issues and things that they have concerns about?
Yes, thank you for asking. It's recently come to our attention that the Common College application, sometimes called the Common App, is not accessible and not working for those who use it, which include entering freshman students who are applying for college, transfer students, guidance personnel, parents, and college admissions personnel who are blind or who are dyslexic and who are using adaptive technology. The Common App, you may remember from when your own kids were in school, is that form has been around since the 1970s, and it is used by about 700 colleges and universities across the country. For about a third of them, it is the only means to apply to those institutions. And it's a very powerful tool. It's a way for students to apply to many colleges simultaneously and fill out only one form, and it offers applicants a dashboard for managing and tracking all of the various submission deadlines. So all of the standardized tests and the letters of recommendation and the various pieces can be so hard even for a sighted student to manage. And for a student who's not reading hard copy papers, it's that much more challenging. And so this is just a way to open up a conversation between the student's family, the guidance counselor, and the admissions office. And when it's not accessible, it's really an employment issue, we feel, and also an educational issue.
Well, yeah, because the most powerful tool in the world doesn't have much power if you can't use it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So we've been taking some steps. The Carroll Center, about 2 years ago, contacted the staff of the Common Application and began some discussions, and they are aware the problem exists, but we feel that more needs to be done to make that tool accessible. So we're beginning to explore some strategies that we might use to move that conversation forward.
We don't often think of it, you know, as we sit here living our lives, but that this kind of negotiation is as illustrated by Mass Eye and Ear. I mean, it takes 3 or 4 years maybe to set it up, and then you're just getting started. And, you know, so it's quite a bit of work.
It's a long-term effort. Most of these things don't happen quickly, but I think they're worth the time and energy we put into them. And I just wanted to make a plug also. You know, we talk about the Legislative Committee and the work we're doing, but really so much of the important advocacy that the Bay State Council does is done by the general membership. We are just very fortunate here in Massachusetts to have Bay State Council members who are either involved as employees or who serve on the boards of nearly every major blind advocacy organization we have, from the Massachusetts Association for the Blind, the Perkins School, the Carroll Center, the Rehabilitation Council of the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, as well as the commission itself. We have Bay State Council members who serve on all of their city and town disability commissions, and that's the kind of advocacy that takes place day after day after day that doesn't always get as much attention as it should, but so much good work takes place there, and it means that the philosophy of the American Council of the Blind and the needs of Bay State Council members are very well represented by our other members.
Well, and that kind of leads me into my next question, which is, let's say for those of us who are not involved in the day-to-day activities, we're not particularly serving on any boards, but we kind of have an idea that we think might require the attention, some sort of legislative attention. What's the best way to bring that to the attention of your committee?
Probably the best way is to start by taking some good notes to outline, as we just mentioned, what happened and when and who was involved, as best as one can remember.
Of course.
And then bring it to the attention of any one of us. I'm always happy to talk to people by phone or by email. And the other members of our committee include Cheryl Cummings and Ann Donna, Bob Hache, and we're very fortunate that Carl Richardson is able to serve in kind of an advisory capacity. He's, of course, the ADA State House Coordinator, and he has a lot of insight into the legislative process. We're very fortunate to have him as a resource. And then Brian Charlson sits on our committee as well. So a note to any one of us or a conversation can sometimes allow us to give a little bit of feedback and advice if that's something that the person would like. And many times these things can be handled by the individual member.
Right.
And if it requires a little more attention, then we can kind of strategize with them about what next steps might make sense.
Well, that's excellent. And, again, just for the folks at home, maybe your email and phone number?
Certainly. It's Deanne, D-E-A-N-N, dot Elliott, E-L-L-I-O-T-T, at gmail.com. And they can call me on my cell, which is 617-721-0314. And, of course, another good resource is ACB National. Tony Stevens, the Director of Advocacy and Government Affairs. There are many resources here in the Bay State Council and the American Council of the Blind that people can turn to when they have questions.
And, of course, for those of you who may not remember this, but although I can't imagine anybody who wouldn't, we happen to have ACB President Kim Charlson as a resident of Massachusetts. So doesn't get much closer to the top than that if you want to get to the seat of power.
It's true. We're really fortunate as a state affiliate to have so many good connections.
Well, Deanne, thank you for being with us this month on Council Connection, and we look forward to hearing from you as these projects progress and as things happen.
Thanks. My pleasure.
You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. The show also airs on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit www.acbfma.org and look for the Council Connection. It's important for all of us to be able to find the services we need when we need them. And with that in mind, John Rochford of the University of Massachusetts Medical School has built a website, disabilityinfo.org. Here he is to tell us about it. Good evening, John. Welcome to Council Connection for the first time.
Thank you.
You have what to me looks like a very interesting website for people here in Massachusetts, disabilityinfo.org. I have to tell you, I went up to the website just to see what it was, figuring it might be helpful to have a little bit of knowledge of how it worked, and I was quite impressed. First of all, it's very accessible, not just usable, but accessible, at least I found it to be so. And second of all, it looked to me like you covered quite a bit of good information. How long has this been up? Because I just found out about this, and maybe I've been living under a rock, but I don't know how many people know.
Yeah, we've been doing this since 1986, and a perennial problem for us is getting the word out about it for the constant changeover of human service staff is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Having no marketing budget is a problem.
Oh, yeah.
It's something that we work on all the time.
So how do you actually get the different resources that you have?
Well, we attend disability-related conferences all over the state, and we tell the constituencies of those conferences about us, and we also gather from them information about programs, services, doctors, dentists, et cetera, that we don't know. That's one way.
Mm-hmm.
Word of mouth is another way. Sometimes we can find a resource that somebody has made available that has to do with Massachusetts, or part of it has to do with Massachusetts, and so we'll get the resources from there. and then we contact those resources and we ask them for more information about what they're doing for the public. So there are all kinds of ways that we are gathering programs and services. A big one coming up is that we just got a contract with MassHealth to add tens of thousands of doctors who serve MassHealth recipients in Massachusetts. So it's a four-year project, and within those 4 years, there'll be tens of thousands of new doctors in our databases.
And
we'll be able to search for them via accessibility features that we already have, such as ramps and bathrooms, et cetera, but also on new accessibility criteria, such as height adjustable exam tables and roll-on scales.
Oh, wow. Well, this is a very complete sounding listing. I noticed that when I looked at the search, there were four categories of services or of things that you could look for. If I remember correctly, it was programs.
Yep, programs and services, doctors, dentists, and consultants.
Yeah.
We have over 7,000 listings.
Okay.
Across those categories.
Now, the first three I pretty much understood, but I wasn't quite sure what consultants meant.
Yeah, it's a variety of people from occupational therapists, physical therapists, estate planners, applied behavior analysis specialists, all kinds of consultants, all who serve people with disabilities.
Okay. And is there some way to filter the disabilities that you're looking for consultants or for anything else? I mean, you know.
Yes, absolutely. When you first choose consultants and then where you want to get their services.
Yeah, I noticed
the location
part of it.
And how you want to pay for
it. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Once you get to those search results, then you can filter by disability served, for instance, to your question. And you can search by all kinds of other criteria.
I think this is just something that would be incredibly useful for our listeners. I'm impressed that you've taken the time and the trouble to work at such an ongoing and probably sometimes sort of thankless project. I mean, how did you get into it? How did you get interested in it?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Well, the way I got into it was I came to the Shriver Center, the Eunice Kennedy Shriver Center. It's part of UMass Medical School. And it already had the index program. That's what we're talking about now, which I direct. But when I first came in, it was as a graduate student, and I learned about index. And within a year, I was working for index as an information specialist. We have information specialists today who are constantly updating the information and acquiring new programs and services and other records, and then also answering phones. So that's the kind of thing I was doing. And I'm a technologist, so I immediately started working on how we could improve the way we do things from a technology standpoint, and that evolved over the years. So I've been with the program since 91.
Well, and that's certainly an issue. You know, a lot of times people have ideas of things they want to do, but they don't have the knowledge or the skill to make it happen, and they have to rely on somebody else, and sometimes that doesn't work real well.
Yeah, that is a problem. We have a network, a large network of over 140 nonprofit agencies in the state who serve people with disabilities and who do information referral. A large part of that network are independent living centers. They are constantly using our databases, this website here that you were talking about, to find programs and services for their constituencies.
Yes, yes. So if an organization wanted to get your attention and, say, be put onto your website, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, they can do it right through the website. We have a Contact Us form.
Okay.
We also have a way to sign up for for our network of information providers.
Mm-hmm.
And soon, within the next 2 weeks, we're going to have a link on our website for agencies and professionals who want to be listed to just add their information. This is a brand new site for us. We are improving it in 2 week, what are called sprints. So we're always evolving the website, fixing bugs and adding new features.
Sure.
And one new feature we're going to be adding is the ability for people to let us know they exist and that they want to be part of our website.
Uh-huh. Now, is there any cost to an agency for doing this?
No.
That's impressive because there's no cost to a user either. Pretty amazing in these days of everybody has to pay for everything.
Well, this is a great segue for me to say that we have two state agencies who are longtime supporters of us doing information referral. One is the Massachusetts Rehabilitation Commission,
mm-hmm.
and the other is the Department of Developmental Services.
Okay.
And their money they give us does fund information referral.
Wow.
Not all of it, but a lot of it.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly, from what I could see, it's certainly being put to very good and effective use. I was quite impressed with what I saw.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm always open for people to let me know if something is not working. And if you ever find something, please give me a call or email me. But because our constituency has always been people with disabilities, then by default, everything we do has to be accessible.
Yes.
And we do my group, Index, does a lot of development work. When I say that, I mean websites in particular, but
right.
also apps.
Mm-hmm.
And online learning management systems, and we have contracts with all kinds of state agencies from around the country. And every single thing we develop, we make sure is accessible from the ground up.
That's good, because often that's the piece of it that's missing.
Yes. Well, I work for the World Wide Web Consortium also, and this is the body that sets all of the standards for the web
yes.
that you've ever heard of, including accessibility standards.
Right.
And I'm on the Low Vision Task Force, which is new, and I'm also on the Cognitive Accessibility Task Force,
mm-hmm.
which is also new. And we're developing the next set of standards that's going to be released next year. So I'm all about accessibility.
Well, you certainly demonstrate that with the website that you have here. Just so that people will know, you mentioned being able to email them. You mentioned them being able to email you. Which would work much better than you emailing them. So could you give us your email and contact information of anything you care to share?
Sure. I'll give you my email address.
Okay.
It's my name, John, J-O-H-N, dot Rochford, R-O-C-H-F-O-R-D, at umassmed.edu. umassmed.edu.
Well, John, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you on the show tonight, and all I can say is keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Once again, John's website is disabilityinfo.org. Let's end our show with Caitlin Hernandez as she paints a musical picture of the fun she had participating in the Braille Challenge a contest that's held every year in June.
My heart is beating so fast, already having a blast. Each year is better than last, and I am in the zone. It's almost time to begin. I roll my first paper in, and I am starting to grin, 'cause we are on our way. They say it's time, and bells ring, fingers fly, and brailers shake the tables. We just caused a braille earthquake. Hey, I just got here, and this is crazy. We all love Braille, so now we're racing. We'll spell some tricky words, and then we'll proofread. And we're enjoying this challenge, maybe. Hey, what is your name? You're from what city? The fun we're having is just beginning. We're on the same page. We've been there, done that. There's understanding right. There's speed and accuracy, and passages we must read, and graphs about everything. Gosh, we'll be here all day, and by the time that we're done, our hands are pretty much numb. But we're so glad that we've come, 'cause there's so much to say. We've aced the testing, there's no time for resting. Soon we'll all be texting, till we're back again next summer. Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy. We both love Braille, so we're friends already. Let's talk technology. Let's share our stories. While we're all here for this challenge, baby. No, we're not here to win a contest. We're here because we have tried our hardest. And all the sighted kids, well, they can't read this, but we know Braille. We're undefeated. We read our Braille books in bed. We stay up all night. We don't need any light. They think we're sleeping tight. And sometimes we goof off in class, 'cause on our Braille notes, our teachers won't know the silly things we wrote. Challenge, maybe. I love my time here, and I am glad we all met each other. It's so amazing. I'll never give up. Get out of my way. My future will be whatever I say. I'll braille up the storm. I'll see you soon when we all come back for this challenge, baby. We read our braille books in bed. We stay up all night. We don't need any light. They think we're sleeping tight. I wait for challenge all year long to be with my friends. I hope this never ends. This challenge, baby.
That was Caitlin Hernandez telling us about the Braille Challenge, and her enthusiasm kind of makes you want to be there. Well, that'll just about do it for this month on Council Connection. If you have any comments or questions about the show, please leave us a message in the BSCB mailbox at 617-923-4519. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, inviting you to join us again in November for another edition of Council Connection.